Welcome to Safety First with Danger Tate.
Welcome to Safety First with Danger Tate. I'm Tate, and this is my interview series where I talk to cool people about the cool things that they do. Our guest today is coming to us from Asheville, and he is potentially the best multi-day guide I've ever known. Definitely the best narrator in any game of Mafia, and he's one of the best instructors in rafting. He loves rivers, and he gives a world-class salmon talk, and he just got back from a week and a half in Ecuador teaching a rowing school. Our guest today is none other than my friend, Daniel Stillman. Let's bring him to the stage.
Hey, Tate.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Great. Excited that you're here. Okay, so you're coming to us from Asheville, and it looks way nicer out there than it does here. Here, it's like a snowy explosion.
We are in the middle of a warm spell near record highs.
Really?
And so it's been amazing.
Yeah. Have you been able to get out boating?
Not here lately. I just came back from Ecuador just a few days ago.
Uh-huh.
So have not boated here for a while. And you know, we've had the big hurricane. And so boating here has been really limited, partly due to access points being destroyed. And otherwise, it hasn't been that kind of like cool to like, hey, I'm going boating while so many people are suffering, so many landowners and things. So it's been a really, probably in my history of boating, it's been the quietest boating fall into winter that I've ever seen.
How did the hurricane affect you?
We had no water for about 5-6 weeks. We just had to use bottled water. We obviously lost power, communication. We actually had I actually put a poll up on Facebook. I said of three things, power, communication, and water. And I didn't mean like drinking water, but like flushing, like moving water, like, you know, for flowing water, which is your most important, power, right, communication, or water. So I'm throwing that to you. What would you think if you were lost services? Which one of those three would you rather have the most initially?
Power, communication, water. I feel like I'd be okay to lose power.
Yeah, me too.
Right? Yeah. I feel like that would be kind of nice. I mean, that's like what a river trip is.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what I thought.
You could use like batteries and stuff like that, right?
Yeah. And then water, luckily we have a creek in our, behind me, there's a creek that goes under my driveway. So we had water to use to flush toilets.
Really? Would you just get buckets?
Oh yeah, buckets, lots of buckets. We'd wash dishes, we would use it. So for us in this area, the biggest detriment we had initially was a lack of communication.
Really?
No internet, no cell phone.
No cell phone even?
No cell phone.
For how long?
For days. And so finally, when we would find little hotspots around the area that had some form of, usually it was some form of internet.
Uh-huh.
And I would see Facebook posts from friends across the country. Are you guys okay? You know, we saw what happened, and we did not know what happened to other areas in our area because we couldn't see it. We had no ability to see it. So it was really surreal. And so I thought the lack of communication, the lack of ability to speak with people and to see what's happening to our area was the biggest concern for most people I know.
Well, and now is everything back to normal?
Pretty much. I mean, regarding this communication, we got our water back. We have power. We have communication. There are a lot of places that don't have homes. A lot like the main road to the Green River Narrows has been closed. You have to go
really?
A different entry. Yeah. The Nolichucky River has a lot of mining going on to rebuild the railroads. So that's always a challenge. If you go there, you literally will float over a man-made bridge and like see large machinery next to you in the river. And that's one of our most popular whitewater rivers around. Yes. The Pigeon River has been is open for paddling to a degree, but they're also still working on building the road right next to it. So there's been a lot of disruption whitewater-wise, I would say.
You're big in the whitewater community there. What, how did you find that? How did you find the community, or maybe even better yet, how did you find rafting?
Initially?
Yeah.
Well, I was a guest. Michelle and I, Michelle, my wife, and I, and our two friends from Florida were on a whitewater trip here. Little did we know, we knew it had rained a lot. So we knew we got down to the French Broad River. We booked with a company. We were the only raft. There was us in a raft with a guide, and there was another raft full of guides that worked for the company. So it was a two-boat trip.
Okay.
I knew nothing about moving water. Nothing at all. We had moved here from Palm Springs, California. I knew nothing about moving water. And all I remember is seeing the guides were all psyched, like in the other boat. They were like all pumped. And I remember seeing logs floating by. Literally, the river was brown and it was moving. And I thought that was normal. I had no idea what I was doing. And we were
What time of year was this?
1993.
But what month?
August. August 93.
And in your mind, were the logs not a red flag?
No. That's how stupid I was.
Okay, well then how do you go from like complete ignorance to now teaching?
We flipped and we flipped. Oh man. And it was horrendous. And so the guy I used to start working for, Ron, he was in the boat ahead of us. He was an amazing guide. He threw one throw rope from the raft full of guides, and he got Michelle. He got our two friends from Florida, one of whom could not swim. He nailed them with one throw. I got catapulted out of the front of the raft and was sent in another channel. And I was in the water forever. Just
what?
And I held my paddle. They told me, hold on to your paddle if you fall out. I never let go of my paddle.
Well, that's how
and
you know
I held
you're
it. I
the
was
truest
getting
guy.
Thundered. I was getting chundered left and right and again and in the water forever. And they couldn't see me and I couldn't see them. Finally, I saw in the distance a blue raft and he had it loaded up with people. And I remember I was coming at it 100 miles an hour and there was a person leaning over the boat waiting for me. And as soon as I hit the boat, they held my life jacket. My leg shot under the boat. My shoe fell off and they pulled me in the boat.
Okay, I feel like for most people, if that happened to them, they'd be like, yeah, no, rafting is not for me. I will never do it.
Well, I
think even now, like, I'm so comfortable in the water. And even now, if that were to happen to me, I'd be like, yeah, I'm retired. I don't know. I think I'll find another hobby. Oh,
I'm telling you, it was really, I didn't know enough to be scared. All I knew is I kept swallowing water and I kept talking to myself, like, be calm, be calm.
So when you got back in the raft, you were like, that was awesome. Like, let's
no,
do it again.
No, we were gone. Like we were like Michelle and our friends were just quiet and we were just exhausted. Like
how many more miles did you have to do?
Not long. It was like, we were near it was like another half a mile. We were done.
Oh my gosh. Wait, but I still like, why did that make you want to start rafting then?
Well, then we went again and about a year later and when Michelle's brother came to town and it was completely different. It was like normal. It had eddies. It had, you know, it was like much more realistic. And so I started talking to the same owner and I said, hey, how do you find guides? He goes, oh, in the spring, you know, we trained and stuff. So I put my name down and he called. And then that next spring, I trained to be a guide.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I kind of fell in love with it.
How old were you when you started or when you trained?
How old was I? 28 maybe? Little.
Okay, nice.
I was later in life. Yeah.
Later in life. That is not. I was in my late 20s, like past
my
prime.
I was retired. No, then I started training and working, and then I just built from there, just kept going. I knew nothing.
I didn't realize that you started in your 20s. I thought because you,
late
started
20s.
You started multi-day guiding then when? So how long did you day guide for?
I day guided. I didn't start commercially multi-day guiding till I was 50.
Okay. Oh, so lots of time just day trip guiding.
Yeah, lots of time. And then private boating. Yeah.
Wow.
You know, just boating around here, going to West Virginia and Tennessee, Georgia, But I really got the bug for multi-day guiding on my first Grand Canyon trip. Haha, you probably never heard that before from people.
I've never heard that.
2009 was my first Grand Canyon trip.
What did you row?
Yes, rowed the whole thing.
Row, yeah. Did you go through an outfitter, or how did that
happen? Yeah, we went through we rented everything.
Okay.
You know, it was a private trip. We rented everything. I think it was pro, maybe.
Yeah, that makes sense.
With the rafts, yeah.
Did you do 18 foot or 16?
We went 16.
Whoa.
I don't know why. My friend Tom, who was my mentor in rafting, said, get a 16.
And was there any carnage?
We had one of the boats went left at Bedrock. I remember that.
Uh-huh.
And then there was another flip somewhere, but I don't remember anything significant.
No.
Other than having the snake under my shorts that trip next to where I slept. Yeah, I decided to sleep on a ledge at one of the camps below Havasu. And woke up in the morning, had laid my shorts down on the rock next to me, like literally like right next to my like groin area. There was a rock, and I sat up and picked up my shorts, and I was shaking them out, you know, for scorpions.
No.
And under my shorts was the fattest Grand Canyon rattlesnake.
No.
This beautiful snake just coiled up. Sleeping.
I don't think beautiful and snake in my vocabulary go together, but I think that's nice and shows that you love all things in nature, which is great. But that's going to be a hard no. Honestly, that kind of like makes my heart go fast. And I'm like, yeah, I'll never do the canyon again.
I know you don't like snakes. He scared me. Yeah. I was like, ah. And then everybody came up to look at him. And then Tom will tell the story that I was screaming, help me. But I wasn't.
You were, I bet. I bet you just blacked out from fear. Okay.
It caught me off guard for sure.
No, I literally, that kind of just really made my, like, I have a watch. Oh no, actually I thought it would have made my heart rate go up, but it didn't.
Can you imagine if you would have went in the sleeping bag with me?
No, Dan, I think you probably would have died.
I would have died. Yeah.
You probably would have died.
Yeah.
I'm glad you didn't die.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, so then for you, so you decided, okay, multi-day guiding is for me. So what to you is different with day guiding versus multi-day guiding?
Oh, man. Multi-day guiding, you really get to know the guests.
Mm-hmm.
And the actual guiding on the river is just a sliver of the whole thing. You have to be like super into repetitiveness, mm-hmm. into the process of it, you know, setting up, breaking down. If you're not into that stuff, it's really hard. You're just as important on the river safety as in the camp. So you have, you know, hey, stay away from the charcoal, you know, let's make sure you're comfortable. Let's try to read people and see if how they're adapting to being outdoors, maybe mm-hmm. for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Entertainment in camp, you know, cooking. I wasn't a very good cook. You know, when I started multi-day guiding, I did, you know, so I consider myself a process cook now.
Wait, what does that mean?
Like, you know, I could follow recipes and like norms, but this, if you ask me to create a meal,
yeah.
that's not my thing.
Okay,
like,
well, maybe
Michelle, my wife, she can create a meal from anything. She actually can cook.
You're like, honey, we don't have the ingredients I know in here. I tap out.
Exactly. I'm like lost.
Okay, well, then do you have like a favorite meal to cook on the river?
That's a good question. I mean, like on the Middle Fork, I do like cooking lasagna. Sometimes it's hard to get to because everybody signs up for it.
Uh-huh.
Even though it's long and complex, but it's kind of fun to create such a beautiful meal. So that's kind of a cool one. I love frying eggs. And we have, of course, our special meal, Wolf Creek breakfast.
Wolf Creek. For those of you who don't know what Wolf Creek is, it's a very fun breakfast where pretty much you turn the kitchen into this like salty diner, like get your food, get the hell out type vibe. And it started with Dan. Yeah. Wait, Dan, you also love baking. I feel like you're always the one to make the cakes.
I do enjoy Dutch oven baking. Yes.
Maybe because, yeah, again, kinda, that's like nothing's more process, like process oriented than baking.
That is very, you're right, very process oriented. And it's also frustrating sometimes because like sometimes you undercook it because you have, you use your same recipe of coals, you know, above and below. Uh-huh. And like the weather's a little bit different, or there's a little more wind or something. So, but it's got pressure, as you know, baking.
Well, have you ever had a dessert just really not turn out?
I've had a few watery things, a little soft, you know, nothing I had to throw away.
Okay, that's good.
But yeah, but you know, it's not always what I'm always proud of. It's like, oh man, I didn't really nail this one.
Well, I feel like we have the, so for context, Dan and I guide together on the Rogue, and we do a lot of like the rowing schools together. But I remember one trip where we didn't remember one of the desserts, or we forgot like the brown sugar or something for the bananas Foster. And I was like, perfect. Well, we'll just serve. I think it ended up being vanilla yogurt, vanilla wafers, and whipped cream. And I like designed it in a nice way. And I brought it to all the guests and I said, here, everyone, it's Tres Blancos. Like, you're going to love this. It's like the most special thing you've ever had. So I feel like a lot of multi-day guiding is like improvisation for like when you forget something or something like that. Do you have any stories of multi-day guiding where you're just like, okay, we are really improvising now and it worked out?
Oh man. I mean, there's, you know, we had a trip one time where we had a boat get stuck at Rainy Falls. And we were there for a long time to unstick it, and we had to float it like basically right next to the falls itself and then pick up the guide and everything. The next day, the boat popped at Taiyi. We had a big gash in the boat from Taiyi Rapid, and that was like 5 minutes from our camp when we just launched that day. So we basically lost the gear boat.
Oh my gosh.
So yes. So I told the crew, okay, guys, we're going to leave a boat here for now. And we left the guide to try to fix it. Uh-huh. I said, I want you just to bring the essentials, nothing more, while we go to the next camp. So that became a big joke among the guests. And they actually printed out like Christmas cards of just the essentials, because they thought that was the funniest thing. This was the group that brought a lot of party outfits and things.
Oh, okay.
And so it became a real joke. So I realized they brought everything on. They brought the essentials plus. Their definition of essentials was everything. So we just made it down the river fully loaded, super heavy, got to the next camp. They had a big party that night. We realized the next morning that we had no coffee. We forgot the coffee. And we had one roll of toilet paper. Because, we tried to bring everything we thought, but we had left other things back on the boat. Luckily, a commercial trip was camping near us. We were able to borrow toilet paper and some more coffee, and traded it for some alcohol. We had lots of that, so we had all the essentials. And then the next morning, about 7 a.m., Thomas showed up with the boat repaired, and so we were all cheered and thought that was awesome. And like, and so we had the rest of our gear, and I thought the trip was ruined. We got the next day, we did our next day trip, you know, the next day on the trip. We got back and I'm like, oh man, these people will never come back again. We just like ruined this trip. And they thought it was the greatest thing in the world.
I know, people love when stuff goes wrong. Adventure was awesome.
Exactly. They really thought it was cool, and watching us improvise.
Oh, okay. I feel like so much more makes sense now, because I'm like, everyone always double checks that you have coffee. People are like, but did we get the coffee? Where is the coffee? Let me just go check. Where is the coffee? Exactly. Okay, it's here. And then toilet paper too. I feel like I have such toilet paper insecurity. So I'm always like, we need to fit more in the bag.
Right.
Wow. Yep. And Thomas just spent the night alone at Taiyi.
He did. He was just downstream of Taiyi. I think he was at Wildcat.
Oh my God.
He spent the night alone. Yeah. And then on one trip, we got to the first night's camp.
Uh-huh.
I brought the groover out to set it up, and I thought it felt kind of light, you know, like out the pink box and I go into the bathroom area and I'm like, oh, this feels light. I open up the lid. There's no cylinder.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Oh, yeah. So the groovers that we use are double. So there's like an outer part and then there's a bladder. So there was no bladder. So what did you do?
No, I, first of all, like, I think I turned white thinking, oh gosh, I know we have two more groovers. If both of those are light, we're really in trouble. So I went back to the boat, and luckily both the other groovers had the bladder. So we were good to go.
My gosh, that is, no, I can't, I, again, my heart is racing.
Welcome to multi-day guiding.
Yeah, right? No kidding. So with multi-day guiding, you've kind of switched a bit of your career. So you're doing less kind of maybe commercial trips, or, you know, we'll see how the season plays out. But like your main focus now is the rowing school. So with teaching rowing, what is it that you love about that?
Yeah, the rowing schools have been amazing. Just to be able to actually go down the river with a different purpose, not just getting down the river and like splashing people and swimming, but actually teaching people to row, like from my boat, and having, like, we do pods of four guests, typically each in their own boat. So we have a pod of what, five boats each. And it's amazing. You know, it's nerve wracking at times because, again, you're not in their boat. And so we have to kind of guide people from our boat and also watch them fail and succeed. And it's so much fun. It is such a blast watching them do cool things. It's a little scary sometimes watching like somebody come out of the boat and having them get them or seeing where they're headed to. But they're learning on the job. And the Rogue is maybe the world's greatest river to teach, in my opinion, especially, you know, a class three rowing school. And so it's so much fun to do those schools.
Yeah, I totally agree. And as you were telling that, I was like, okay, I'm really remembering some of the times when things have gone wrong. Do you have any that come to mind of like, oh, shit.
Oh.
And you don't have to name any names. Don't name any names.
I remember, I think it was last year, going into Wildcat. The left line at Wildcat is one of my favorites, like to begin day two, following Tai'i, and just to like practice, you know, slowly pivoting, you know, how we pivot, back ferry, pivot. That's one of our basic tenets. And I remember having a really nervous student. I would always put them right behind me. So I would lead and they can literally watch me, and I will point to my butt and say, look where my butt's going, you know, so they know how to pivot. The minute she got in there, she popped the oar. She put her downstream, you know, it's shallow. She put her downstream oar in the water and immediately it flew off. And I went, okay. And it was pretty good water level that day, so she was flying, so I had to go get her and kind of like try to keep barging her into the current so she didn't go near any weird places. And so I would have to push her and then get away and then push her again, and she's going through everything sideways. She had a blast, she did great, but that was really unexpected at that moment.
How did the other three students do?
They did great. I think, I don't remember, but I think everybody was upright. Everybody was in their boat. So I think they did fine.
Do you remember there was a woman one time, we were like coming into the camp at Lower Horseshoe, or like the main Horseshoe camp. And this woman blows by the eddy, and all she yells is, she's like saying goodbye to all of us, is, I'm not happy.
Oh, I remember, because she came back last year. And I, when I saw her, I said, I thought it was her. She came with another friend, another girlfriend. And I thought it was her friend that said that. So I said, hey, remember when your friend came by camp and missed camp and was like, I'm not happy. And she goes, that wasn't my friend. That was me. I'm like, oh my God, I thought that was your friend.
You're like, whoops. Well, just so you know, you're a legend. And we tell people about you, because it was so funny.
That's definitely legendary.
Well, and just to set the record straight, we got her to camp. She didn't spend the night alone. Okay, and well.
Amazingly, she had a phenomenal time.
Yeah, on the second trip or on the first trip?
I didn't know, but when she came back in the second trip, she said she had a phenomenal time on the first trip also.
Okay, good. I'm glad. Woo!
Me too.
Well, okay, and so, you just got back from Ecuador, and Ecuador was a rowing school too, right?
Yeah, it's like a 3+.
Okay. Rowing. What was like the goal of Ecuador, would you say? Because it was through Northwest. It was like for work.
That's a good question. I mean, the goal, like, the goal, it kind of morphed a little bit during the trip even, but the goal was to, it was similar to our class four schools. It was like, you run as a team, you're watching, you know, you're looking ahead, looking behind, you know, you're not mm-hmm. just running solo. And we would use hand signals, you know, like ready to go, and mm-hmm. teach people to have more awareness of the river mm-hmm. and who's boating with them. So not just boating for yourself. And then also I would, you know, Zach and I were teaching people, hey, you know, like watch my angle when we, you know, try to create some more efficient rowing. And mm-hmm. the rapids, some of them were pretty technical and tight. So it was definitely a step up from the Rogue River as far mm-hmm. as like difficulty on some of the rivers, and which was a great challenge for them. So it was a kind of combination of group boating, understanding safety, becoming a better rower. And we took one day in the river. There's a river right behind the lodge, and we did actually a safety class that day. We did wading in the water, throw bags. We did a rescue scenario. We did raft flipping. So we kind of did kind of combine that in our off day. So it was a lot of fun.
That is a lot of fun. How many rivers did you end up doing?
I think we did about 8.
What?
Yes. Like one river would flow into another river, you know, it's like, so that was really cool. Uh-huh. Like the Junduchi River would flow into the Hagine. And so mm-hmm. there was like a creaky river, tight and technical, flowing into a bigger water tight river with big boulders and things. So it was really cool.
And was the water warm?
For the most part, a couple of them were a little cooler that came from higher elevation. But for the most part, the water was kind of like the Rogue.
Wow.
In temperature. And then the days were probably, you know, like low 70s, maybe 80 degrees, and a little humid. But and really, the mosquitoes weren't bad at all. So it was pretty ideal.
Wow. Like,
and some epic put-ins and takeouts, you know, with carrying boats and things. But not too bad.
Had you been to Ecuador before?
No. Never.
No. Had you rafted internationally before?
No.
Woo! How Never. Was the infrastructure? Like, what was it different than the U.S.?
It really wasn't bad. The road from Quito, the main capital, to our area was about a 4.5-hour drive, 5-hour drive. We were back mm-hmm. going into the jungle area, and there was a town called Tena. So the infrastructure wasn't bad. The lodge was really good. The lodge had had Wi-Fi. It had great food and great accommodations. It was beautiful. And it was right on another river, the Misa, mm-hmm. and which is where we did some training on. So the lodge couldn't have been better. Santi was the owner of the lodge and the main guide that owns the company there that we collaborated with. Mm-hmm. He was amazing. He knew every river level. He set up all the kayak safety and the shuttles. So without him, it would have been very difficult to do.
I think that's cool to hear because when I think of Ecuador, I really just think of kayaking. And so it's so fun to hear about rowing and rafting. And I think that opens up a huge door for all the rafters out there to get to go internationally too. Because you flew with your raft or everything, right?
I flew with a raft. Zach flew with a bunch of oars and the frame. And he had, and also a raft. Yes, he brought another raft. And so I left my raft there. He left his raft there. Unfortunately, Ecuador, it's really next to impossible to get equipment there, to actually purchase it from there. There's some kind of really high government tax that would be placed on all goods shipped in, which makes mm-hmm. it cost prohibitive to really bring in gear. So usually they get their kayaks from kayakers that fly it in and leave it there. Same with the rafts. So it's and that's kind of a shame, but hopefully that we can build an arsenal up there pretty good mm-hmm. And that we won't have to worry about that in the future.
Because are you going to go back?
I will do want to go back next year. Yes.
Yes. Okay.
And hopefully we'll have 2 or 3 trips booked.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's exciting.
I think we will. I think we'll have at least 2. I mean, it's so fun. That's much awesome.
With kind of opening your eyes to international rafting, are there any other places on your bucket list?
Yeah, I think I would love, I mean, I've never been to Chile and mm-hmm. friends of mine have a company on the Foo.
Oh, nice.
LeFou, so that would be cool to see. From the videos, it looks amazing. And then I've never been to Bhutan. I know we do a trip in Bhutan, but I've never been. So maybe someday to go there. But
well, that'd be great.
Yeah. I never really thought about it until this year.
That's exciting. You know, kind of the next frontier of your rafting
career. I know. It was amazing. I don't fly a lot, so it was awesome.
Oh, yeah. You're a big driver.
I'm a driver, yes.
How many hours can you drive in a day?
Cross country, I can drive easily 16 hours. Yeah.
Oh.
But I don't drive at night. So I might start at 5 a.m., but I'll quit by, 8 p.m. Usually I'm driving in the summertime, so it gets dark late. But yeah, I'll quit right at dusk.
What do you do to stay awake? Or what do you do to entertain yourself?
Now it's a little easy with podcasts and things, and listening to music. But that's really what I do. Just watch, look around.
I'll never forget one time Dan and I, we were putting in on the Rogue River. There was like fire restrictions. So we had to go, we had to drive the truck with all of the student boats because it was a rowing school at 5 a.m. And we had to drive through Wolf Creek, the namesake for the funnest breakfast we do. But we drive through Wolf Creek, but we literally leave the warehouse at 5 a.m. and Dan puts on 80s dance music. I feel like you have the most energy of anyone I've ever met. And I feel like that is the perfect representation with 80s dance music. And I've got a lot of energy too, but I think I let it go for 30 minutes before and I can't do it anymore.
Can we turn this?
And then we put on Chris Stapleton Radio, which is one of the best radio stations of all time.
Chris Stapleton.
Well, okay. And I do. So Ecuador sounds amazing. And I kind of want to pivot back to guiding a little bit. And I think that I remember there was my third trip ever multi-day guiding and you were the TL. And I remember it was the last night we cleaned up dinner and I just sat down in the kitchen and I just started sobbing, crying. And I was like, Dan, I don't think I can do it. Like, I don't think I can do the workload. I don't think I can handle the pressure that I'm putting on myself. I think I'm done. Like, I'm going to tell Zach and Michael I'm out. And you were like, no, you've got this. Well, you didn't you validated my feelings. Claps for validating my feelings. You listened and it was amazing. And I think I just bring that up because you are, the best guide that I think I've ever seen. You're so patient and kind and you deal with things that come out of nowhere. Like the story earlier where you're just like, well, whatever, we'll work it out. And you're also really good at elevating others and teamwork. And so I'm just curious, with guiding or even just with working on a team, what wisdom do you have for how to accomplish your level?
That's a great question. And going back to what you said, I've been there. There are times I always say multi-day guiding is the highest of the highs. And then sometimes it can be the lowest of the lows. If you're not feeling well, if you're sick, you can only hide a little bit. You can't go to your room and turn the lights off and go under your covers. You can go to your tent and that's about it. And you still have work to do. So it's really hard. The emotions can run really high. And I try to really, really look at that in the guides that we work with and say, hey, how often have we covered for each other? Like, hey, I'm going to cook for you tonight. Go sit down, get away from the guests for a night. We all need to recharge and that happens different ways. And so I think reading the room of really talking to your guides and your coworkers and just offering to take something from them. Can't tell you how many times people have taken meals from me and say, hey, I got this. Go be with the guests or go do this. And vice versa. I mean, we're such a great team that we work with and just realizing that just because you signed up for a certain task or thing doesn't mean it's going to go that way. And we all look out for each other and be willing to adapt and understand that our feelings, that we're not perfect. We're not robots.
We're not?
We're not.
I'm like, but I want everything to be perfect and go my way. And I want to just have control over everything.
Exactly. And we pride ourselves on giving the guests the best time ever. But we realize that sometimes when we don't think it's going right, they still are having a blast. And sometimes we have to adjust the guests' expectations to realize, hey, you know, we can't control this. We can't control mm-hmm. what camp we have tonight or what the weather's like or what the river level is. And so realizing that's just part of the game of being outdoors.
When you're outdoors doing your thing, how do you recharge personally?
I try to get away too. I love chatting with the guides in the kitchen sometimes, especially after the meal, the evening meal. The kitchen is technically like closed, and then we kind of hang out for a little bit and have a little guide time. I love sat texting my wife, Michelle. I just like to, even though I can't talk to her, but just to sat text her. Just to kind of see the words, you know, having her talk back. And then I always think about calling her when I get off the trip, you know, like telling her and seeing what's going on with her and things and telling her about the trip. And so, you know, things like that, just watching the guests have a good time. If they're having a great time, then that means that's all I care about. We always say there's two rules, right? The guests have a great time and they're safe. Mm-hmm. Let's just build everything around that.
I think that is a really beautiful segue into building, whether it be guiding or any career that people choose, like building that work-life balance. Mm-hmm. You know, what are things that you do? Because you work full-time as a physical therapist in Asheville when you're not guiding, right?
Pretty close, yeah. A little less than full-time, but yeah, I work most days.
Yeah.
Like today, I'm working today. And it's hard, you're right. It's hard with the work-life. And then being away with Michelle, I mean, my wife is amazing. She's probably way more adventuresome than I am. She loves to try new restaurants. She loves to try new things. She loves to take chances. She has more friends than I'll ever have in my life. And she just loves that stuff. So she drives me to do more things. I'm very much a routine person. I can like go to the same restaurant constantly, you know, or the same mm-hmm. pub. We have a lot of brew pubs here but she gets me going different places. So I think she's a big part of like the adventure, you know, because she just loves to see things like that.
So I think, you know, then for you with work-life balance, is it finding the adventure outside of work when you have such an adventurous job? Or
I think so. I think it's also like being in healthcare, it's being a physical therapist, and you know, my patients have been sick or are sick or have been injured. And it's nice not to be around people that have been injured and sick. Like, so it's a very similar concept with guiding, because like it's I think it's a service industry, and I think we're a servant, and I mean that in the way that we're serving people. We're not butlers or waiters, but we're serving people, serving them a good time and good food and a nice environment and a safe environment. Just like if you were in healthcare, you're serving your patient, you know, as with your skills and you're there for them. I mean, primarily. And I look at it like we're there for our guests on the river trips. It's their trip. I don't look at it as my trip. I look at it as their trip.
Do you think that was learned, or do you think that's innate within you?
I think part of it's innate. Maybe I take on some of that, maybe more so than I should, but I think I didn't have to really work at it. And sometimes I do. I mean, we all have our moments, but I think it's more, you know, innate, but it also is learned to a degree on how much to give, and realizing again that, you know, the trip is about the guests, to the best degree that we can do.
With that, I mean, you mentioned that you've done a lot of private boating. And so, you know, with private boating, it's totally different. It's not as much about the guests, but I guess there is still that kind of team mentality. What with private boating kind of bleeds from guiding over, or, you know, what are some experiences you've had private boating that represent that?
I think private boating is where you learn the most. I mean, you make so many mistakes. When I started boating, I swam constantly.
Really?
Flipping. Oh, yeah. flipping. You know, I thought I was a better guide than I was. You know, class five, heck yeah. You know, let's go. I'll tell you a funny story. There's a river here in Kentucky called the Russell Fork. And it's class five big. It's sieved out. It's tight. It's a kayak river, but usually the last release of October, it has a little more water. So you'll see some rafts go down. And my first time on it, we went down El Horrendo, big drop into a big hydraulic, dislocated my shoulder in that drop. Yep. Had my paddle down like this. I was sitting on the left side and just had my paddle just ruddering, and it just took my arm and pulled it straight down, like literally straight down, and popped it right out. Never had a dislocation before. So that was a huge ordeal to get me out of there, to get to a hospital, which it's another long story. You're in the middle of nowhere, Kentucky, coal mining area. And so 7 years later, I went back on that river, same with the same person, R2ing, dislocated my shoulder.
No, same shoulder?
Same shoulder.
Have you been back since?
7 years later. I have not.
No, smart.
7 years later.
Protect your shoulders. Okay, well then that's interesting though. So, I mean, you had the experience from the first time that you did it, and then 7 years later you did it again. What were the differences in like the response?
The difference was the second time we actually flipped. And so, and my shoulder actually went back like a typical dislocation and the second time. And my friend who I went with, instead of taking me to that hospital in Kentucky, he drove me back to Asheville.
Really?
Yeah.
So you were just the car like hurting?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's about 3 hour drive. And he was probably doing about 90 to 100 driving me back. And I'm glad he did, because our hospital here in Asheville is really good. And we knew a lot of people, like my wife knew a lot of the people in the ER from working in the ER. So it was good, but it was a long drive. But
I feel like sometimes the shoulder dislocations are like, I feel like what I've learned is to try and put it back in. Wasn't going to go back in your shoulder.
I tried myself stepping on my hand and doing the things that I know, but I couldn't do it. Yeah. And
that really
But that was it. That was probably like probably the weirdest thing that's ever happened to me on the river.
Huh. What other carnage stories do you have? I feel like you've got to have a ton.
Oh, we've got so many. I remember the first time we went down to Tallulah, where rafts were just starting to go down. This river is in Georgia. It's only 1.3 miles long, but you have to go down 450 steps to get down. It's massively steep. There's a rapid called Oceana that if you look at it, you will never want to go down it.
Is that the one that I've seen with like slides?
100-foot slide down on a big rock called the Thing that pillows a bunch of water off of. And I remember my first time there, we ran it, the river. And I remember seeing a bloody face at the bottom of Oceana and somebody being walked out. And I remember seeing another kayaker with his arm like this and trying to flag us down. And, you know, I haven't been rafting that long. And then I remember my friend saying, don't make eye contact. Let's just go. We're going. So we just kept, because we were on our own adventure. Like,
and did it go well?
That's a big, yeah, we did fine. But, so I think I was like pushing myself beyond my abilities. And so there was a lot of swims, a lot of things I saw. And, you know, I think that's how you learn, you know, especially back then there was no videos. So there was no like internet to show us lines, you know, of the Narrows or of Oceana, of different rivers. You just have to go out there and try it.
What do you think the draw is? Because it is such a dangerous sport. I mean, kayaking, rafting, anything with really moving water is inherently dangerous. What's the draw for you and for people in general?
That's a great question. I mean, I think it's relatively safe, even though we've had some big swims, but we're all still here. I also think that there's a challenge, right? I used to say me versus the river, but I realized like that's crazy. I'm working with the river.
Yeah.
And I think it's just like, it's also the camaraderie of being around a bunch of people and also like, you know, getting through a rapid, like, and going, woo, you know, everybody cheering or watching a big flip and helping each other out. And then just being on the river, like sometimes it feels like you're dancing, you know, like, or playing an instrument. Like when you're really having, you're in a great vibe and you're in that current and you're just hitting everything perfectly. It's, to me, it's like playing an instrument, a song, and you just playing it so well. And it feels so good.
Do you ever start a run and you're like, today's not my day. I'm screwed. Today is not my day. Are you ever able to flip the narrative in your mind and be like, oh no, I can still play the instrument. I can still write the song. And how do you do that?
That's a good question. I don't think I ever walked off a river.
No.
No. I think to my detriment.
Oh, interesting.
I know. Yeah. I think I should have in a couple places.
Can
for
you share?
I know. I know of one place for sure. We should have, but we didn't.
What happened? And, if you want to share.
It was a friend of mine came to visit, and we went in. I was at the Double Y my first season in Grants Pass, and then he wanted to come visit, and he was there for business with Watershed Dry Bags. Mm-hmm. And so he said, hey, if you find a river, let me know. He was in Northern California. So I said, yeah, let's go to Burnt Ranch Gorge and of the Trinity. And so sound great. So one boat trip, two of us. Couldn't even find the put in. They were doing construction. It was so discombobulated. And I'm so used to the East Coast where there's always somebody boating. We have so many boaters in a small place. There's always in Northern California. Now I know it's so spread out. There's nobody there. It was a weekday. It was like 110 degrees. And it was two of us put on Burnt Ranch Gorge. So probably one of the dumbest things I've done that, you know, is to put on that river, not knowing it, not having anybody that knows it, and just one boat trip. We made it. We had a couple flips, but it was quite an adventure. I'll leave it at that. But
what's the danger in a one boat trip for people who don't know?
Well, you know, when you're a one boat trip, like you have nobody, no other boat out there that can help gather you up. So if something happens, if say your boat gets pinned on a rock or so, and you're hanging off the boat or you're in the water, you always having another boat there really gives you that ability to help rescue each other, and or to at the very least go out and find help if they have to. But having a one boat trip is not the smartest idea, because that's the only craft you have. And even though there was two people, that we only had one boat. So there was really no safety for us if we wound up being in the water. We just had to save ourselves or save each other. Mm-hmm. So it's probably a super high risk thing. And I wouldn't do it again today.
I really appreciate you sharing that. I feel like it's kind of, I mean, to share, you know, in your mind and that you did that is brave, especially on the internet. And so thank you for sharing. Cause I do think you're right. And like, that is how we learn. And that is, like you said, you'll never do it again. And so, yeah, thanks for sharing.
No problem. I've done a lot of dumb things.
Want to share anymore?
Oh, we might be here a while.
My watch says we're good.
Oh yeah. I mean, just like going out alone. I mean, I've boated alone a lot, but on rivers that I really know and levels that I really know, I thought, you know, it was acceptable to me. But, you know, going on a big class 4 or 5 river alone, that's just really dumb. Yeah. Or taking people on rivers that don't have the experience, like don't know what to do if they fell out of the boat or we've done that a lot. You know, like thinking it was fun, you know, like I remember going down the Chioa River and my friend taking one of the ladies from our day trip company. She worked in the office. And when we set shuttle, you really literally driving along the river so you can see the river. And she started crying while she's like, this is where we're going. And I'm like, yep, this is where we're going. And she was not in my boat, but she was in my friend's boat. So it was about six boats. And she literally cried on the river. She was really scared. Cried before the river trip and cried on the river.
Did she ever find her Zen?
She laughed about it afterwards, but I know she was probably like mentally exhausted for sure.
I think that's interesting too, because I feel so lucky that I'm so comfortable on water. And I do think I take it for granted where I'm like, oh, not everyone is comfortable
exactly
here. And so, I mean, even back to guiding or day guiding, whatever, that is a cool thing that we get to share with people is that, you know, yes, this is a scary place, but there's a way to be comfortable on it, a way to feel safe on it, and a way to have fun on it. And I think that's for guiding something that I think is really cool.
I think you're right. I think with our rowing students, I think one of the biggest things that I've noticed is that often they're afraid of coming out of the boat. And yeah. So that fear in the rapid kind of takes over their learning ability at the time. And so I think we started, you remember, we started talking to our students about, hey, I mean, let's relax in the river. This is what happens. And also, hey, let's jump in the river sometimes and feel what it feels like. And I think just, you know, getting that fear away from people where they can actually listen and learn and realize, oh, wow, I need to like pivot my raft this way or this way. And I'm not just like laser focused on like the scariest thing in the river. Mm-hmm. I think that's a big deal for all of us as we learn in boating.
I think that's huge. And even just looking where we want to go. And I feel like, not to go too metaphorical, but you could apply that to life too, of like, yeah, look in the direction that you want to go. And that is how you start dancing with the water. It's been really cool to kayak in the gorge and see, you know, watch really, really good kayakers, and just the way that they can dance with the water. I think I had never seen that in a kayak form. And then I'd never really like heard it described as well as you did, of it's dancing with the water, it's working with the water. So that's really cool.
I totally agree. It's such a great feeling when you just feel like, I always say we feel like I'm on like the moving escalator in the airport. If I'm back ferrying in my raft and I'm just going around a feature and just flying around and barely doing anything. All I did was set an angle. Mm-hmm. And it's just a great feeling of having to do very little work, but use the river to our advantage.
What does rafting look like for you this upcoming spring? What are you excited to get on?
I want to get back on the rivers here and like see the Nolichucky, how it's changing with all the work being done on the railroad. I would love to teach a safety. I'm a swiftwater rescue instructor, but I would love to actually teach a class this spring if I could set one up. And really, I got some good ideas of like really boiling it down. Zach was talking to me a lot, and I really like a lot of the concepts he was mentioning about the important things as for guide training, how a lot of our swiftwater rescue is all based on fireman training, like with lots of people and lots of gear versus boating, like literally swiftwater rescue for boaters, where we don't have, you know, 14 people and a lot of gear. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of cool. So I would love to teach if I could teach a class here in the Asheville area this spring.
That'd be great.
And then I just want to come out and work on the rowing schools in May and June. I retired from Idaho, so no more Idaho for me on the Middle Fork. So that I'll have a little extra time. And then spend more time with Michelle. And we want to go we have some vacations planned already. So I want to do that.
It's going to be a really good year.
I think it is.
Yeah, really great year. Yeah. And I'll get to see you. So it's going to be even better for me. Selfishly, my year is going to be great.
Your year is great. Your life is awesome.
Well, same with you. And thank goodness we have each other.
I know. We have a good crew. We're very blessed.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat. I love shooting the shit with you. So...
Same here. It was awesome.
It was really fun to hear about kind of guiding and different experiences that you've had. So thank you.
It's been my pleasure. You are a phenomenal person and a phenomenal guide. And you are way better than I will ever be.
I just could not disagree more, but that's really kind of you. All right. Well, you're the best, Dan, and have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thanks, Tate.
See ya.
Appreciate it.